Foodie Films is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. Hey there, foodie fans, and welcome back to another episode of Foodie Films. Of course, this is your host, your chef de cinema cuisine, Kyle Reinfried. What's going on? What's happening? How are ya? Ooh! Just like I told you in the opening for Big Sam's episode, I went back to New Orleans, and I had a hell of a time. Went with a group of friends who I'd never been with before. I think only like one or two of them had been once before, and that was a while ago, so I was their food Sherpa. Yes, I take on that mantle proudly, and I showed them around. And yeah, we did some other things. We weren't in the city the whole time. We did a swamp tour. We did a plantation tour, which was really, you know, really cool, educational, and I'm all about that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I go to New Orleans to eat, drink, and listen to music, which I definitely did successfully on this trip. Tried a few new spots. Tried Verde Mart. That was something that an Uber driver recommended to one of my friends when they were, because we all got there different times, and that it's like just a bodega, 24-hour convenience store, but they make a hell of a po' boy. Yes, yes, yes. I did a whole episode on Parkway Bakery Tavern, and I went back there this trip, and I had the James Brown, which is the roast beef fried shrimp po' boy. But Verde Mart, it's open 24 hours. It's on Royal, which is a block away from Bourbon, so when you're feeling good, you need something in your stomach, you go to this place at, like, you know, midnight, and you get a po' boy, and the po' boy I got was called All That Jazz, which was fried shrimp and like ham and cheese. And you know, it didn't. In Jersey, we've got this thing called Grease Trucks. It's by Rutgers University, and it's like these sloppy cheesesteak sandwiches. You know, some mozzarella sticks on it and fries. And that's what, when my friends were like, "Oh, is this a good po' boy?" I'm like, "Yeah," and that it is. And that's what I equated it to. It's like, you know, just like you want that sloppy, greasy late night food that's absolutely delicious. Get a po' boy at Verde Mart. I didn't have every which one. I'm just saying that all that jazz one was in that realm of sandwich, but a hell of a sandwich. I also went to Raisin Kings, Big Sam's favorite fast food spot, you know, known for down there. I want a Raisin Kings up here because those chicken fingers were crispy but juicy, just awesome, awesome chicken fingers, really good dipping sauce for them. I went to Slim Goody's Diner. That's a diner on Magazine Street, and which is a really cool part of New Orleans. A lot of great shops around there. I had passed by before, but I think I just came from like Turkey and the Wolf, a great sandwich spot. But I finally went to Slim Goody's, had a really good breakfast there. And then, if I'm saying finally, you know, finally, went to Willie Mae's Scotch House, the James Beard award-winning restaurant, known for their fried chicken. So, of course, I had three-piece fried chicken, red beans, and fried okra. Everything was delicious. I mean, of course, the fried chicken, but that fried okra, I could just be, like, sitting. I wish that was, I asked the question, you know, movie theater snack. I wish that was movie theater snack. You know, it was just these little chopped-up pieces of fried okra. Absolutely delicious. And, hey, I'm talking all this food. I need a drink to go along with it. And what a perfect episode. I spoke with Shelley Oshner-Wagasbeck, Madam President, I hope I got your name correctly. She is the president of Pat O'Brien's. Pat O'Brien's, New Orleans staple. You go there, you get a hurricane. Of course, I went this time, even, you know, this past trip, and I got a hurricane there. You get one hurricane, maybe, you know, there, maybe get one to go. They're sugary, they're strong, got four shots of rum in them. They're delicious. You're going to hear all about them on this episode. So here we go, me talking with Shelley.
I mean, let's just jump right in. And what was, I mean, you guys just had the national championship in New Orleans. What was, I mean, you guys are, it's a party town. It's, you got, I was talking with Christian, VP of like communications for the city. And he, you know, he said over, I forget how many people he said, you know, visit this city annually, but like.
Oh, annually, I think it's about 10 million, 10 to 12 million.
I think he even said something crazier than that, like something like 18 million or I don't know, something, you know, I don't know. But nonetheless. Millions. And we're at Pat O'Brien's. For anyone that doesn't know you, please give us your name, what you do, all that good stuff.
Okay. So my name is Shelley Oshner-Wagesbeck. I'm third generation here at Pat O'Brien's. My grandfather was a general manager in the 40s, and then my dad grew up in this business as well as I did. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whole family story of commitment to the tradition of Pat O'Brien's.
As I was saying, national championship, LSU won.
Yeah, how about right? that?
How about that? That was, you know.
Happy day.
Go Tigers, go LSU Tigers.
Right. But you have to say it like, go Tigers.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, so you know which Tiger you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, his coach's voice, that is something else. It's almost like on the verge of like a cliche, you know. Bayou Cajun, like, you know, he's just, it sounds like he smokes a pack of backwoods a day.
He does. I mean he doesn't, but people that have grown up with him have that's how he just kind of came out the womb. That's how he has sounded forever. That's just his
now
voice.
I'm just imagining a little baby.
Like, I know, right?
Mama, how about a cookie? But so Party City, you know, like, you know, just constant tourists. But what was this? What was this with the national championship? What was that like for you guys here at Pat O'Brien's? I mean, this is a New Orleans staple.
It was incredible. Sunday, once LSU came in town, because it was really just a sea of orange up until late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. So once LSU came in town, it was nonstop. It was rocking. Yeah. The bartenders are exhausted, but they loved it. This was the past 3 days with LSU and Clemson being in town were beyond what Endymion Saturday is here in New Orleans, mm-hmm. which is huge because that's typically our biggest day.
Yeah,
Endymion Saturday. So they're thrilled. They're exhausted, but we're looking forward to the next round of Mardi Gras.
Yeah,
and
we are in it. We're in carnival season.
We are. It started a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, right, with King Day, right? That's mm-hmm. like that starts in Ash Wednesday. Is like, you know, it's enjoying and partying, debauchery and libations galore, and then Lent.
Yes, and then we have French Quarter Fest, and then we have Jazz Fest,
We
always have something going on.
Is the summertime like the quiet time just because it's just, I mean, while it is humid right now in January, summertime, that's, you feel like you weigh an extra 10 pounds because of the humidity.
It's warm, but summertime used to be really, really slow, but there are some conventions that kind of trickle in town now, so that really helps out with everybody just to kind of keep everybody making some money, the wait staff and everything. So.
And everyone wants a cold drink.
Yeah, you need a cold drink. You definitely need one.
So you said you're third generation. Let's talk about the history of Pat O'Brien's, because I mean this place. I mean, how long has it been open now?
Since 1933.
1933.
And it actually opened down the block. Excuse me. At a place, it was a little tiny place. There was an upright piano.
Okay.
They actually had a piano player then, so it kind of started off having entertainment.
Yeah.
Little place. That's actually a picture right there. And they moved here in 1941.
Okay.
And that's when it kind of exploded. They had more space.
Yeah.
And the facility was similar to what it is now, mm-hmm. With the exception of the upper deck patio, which was all kind of like a grassy park area.
Yeah, I read that. I think you guys, I love it. Like on Parkway Bakery, who I talked with, Justin Kennedy, they got great, like, you know, history blurbs on their website. I was reading on yours as well. And that's just like fun knowledge that you guys kind of had like a garden that people would, you know, like hang out at, like the grassiness, right?
They just picnic out there.
Yeah.
They'd buy a drink, maybe, maybe not. Just picnic. And it there's a picture of it downstairs in the main bar. But yeah, it was kind of a different, it's kind of similar to what we have now, just a kind of laid back kind of feeling. Not picnicky, but
that was a beautiful courtyard.
You can come and hang out and enjoy the day or enjoy the night or whatever. So it's similar kind of, you know, attitude.
Yeah, just the ultimate local watering hole. Mm-hmm. I mean, so what was there, not to get taboo, but was there an iteration during Prohibition of, or was Pat O'Brien's, you know, post-Prohibition?
We officially opened the day after Prohibition.
Right. Wink, wink.
Down the street.
Officially opened, yeah.
Yeah.
Any like stories that have been passed on generations to generation as far as just that whole experience here during Prohibition? Any anecdotes of sorts?
Cantrell and Pat O'Brien were interesting characters, bootlegged a little bit, did the norm of what was going on there.
They were providing a service.
They were providing a service, exactly. Big time card players, and I've been told by one or two people that Charlie Cantrell received his stock from Pat O'Brien through a card game.
Okay.
So I don't know how much actual money was transferred through that, but that's how they kind of became partners.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's just, you know, I mean, I know from the movie Untouchables, a fictional movie, you know, based off real life, Elliot Ness and all that during Prohibition, Al Capone, but I think it's like, oh God, why am I blanking on his name right now? Kevin Costner. At the end, they're just like, you know, when Capone is arrested at the end, and then Prohibition, you know, like I think even maybe in the movie Prohibition ends, they're like, what are you going to do now? He's like, I'm going to go have myself a drink.
Yeah.
It's like, he was just a man doing his job when it was as a federal, you know, agent, when it was illegal.
Right.
But no, it's not illegal. It's just like, yeah, I'm going to go have a drink because it's not, you know. It's something, it's hard to believe that at one point that was something that was, you know, cracked down, that it was just like, they thought that that was going to solve problems, you know, but it just created more crime.
It did. We can look at the same scenario these days with other things.
Sure.
We look back then and we're thinking, oh, it's just alcohol. And we look at today's issues and it's like, oh, well, it's just this or it's just that.
Yeah.
But it's all... everything changes. It's all relative.
Everything changes. It's all a slippery slope in certain, you know, cases, and you know, you just try to solve one thing, but it creates more problems. But so you're third generation. So when did your family come into play?
So my grandfather was the general manager in the 40s.
Okay.
For Pat O'Brien and Charlie Cantrell, and he ran the place. He was a very good business person, so he was able to manage the money and invest it properly and all that, you know, manage the inventory. And he pretty much strongly encouraged my dad to work here as well when he was a little kid. So he'd sweep the floors and do all that kind of stuff, bar back and things like that. So so my dad and my grandfather started buying the stock for the bar in the 1970s.
Okay. What did your grandfather, what did your father do in the, I mean, again, since it's such an old establishment, like, what changes happened under their, you know, reign?
Well, the hurricane, of course, was developed as a part of a cohesive effort to come up with some drink that would use all the rum that was getting stockpiled.
Okay.
Because it was coming up from the river, from the islands. Everything else was kind of hard to get because of the war. And, you know, a few years ago, I was talking with a reporter, and he enlightened me that some of the, actually a lot of the distilleries in the country were turned into factories to make bullets.
Wow.
So that's part of why they couldn't get whiskey or anything like that.
Okay. That's interesting. I never knew that.
Yeah, I know. And it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And so my grandfather was kind of like the keeper of the house. And when my dad came in, my dad had such an outgoing, wonderful personality. He just, you know, he was the bar manager, but he really created the buzz of, come to this place. This is a great place. This is awesome. And we're so much fun. There's so much to do.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't invent the piano concept,
sure,
the dual concept, because that actually kind of was created down the street with the ragtime kind of, when the ragtime players played off of each yeah. other. So that's kind of how the piano concept morphed. Now they play off of each other. They, you know, they take tips and whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas before it was the entertainer's call is what they wanted to play. So that was really kind of like the takeoff. And the fact that back then there weren't hundreds of great, wonderful places to go to in the French Quarter. They were pretty limited. So word of mouth, I mean, they never advertised anything. It just was word of mouth. And it really was a locals place. And then I would say kind of like in the late 70s, early 80s, that's when it kind of got really, really well known.
Okay.
Especially with the World's Fair. We had the drink of the World's Fair.
Okay. Yeah, that's
so it just kind of, you know, it kind of snowballed. And then the business has changed model after throughout the years. Mm-hmm. We have a private party room, we have a restaurant, we have a private parties on the river. And that the change has come from necessity of the New Orleans market. Like in the 80s, the 1980s, that's when the drinking age changed to 21, it used mm-hmm. to be 18.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of thinking ahead, we needed to kind of change the business model from strictly bar to accommodating families and accommodating younger people. So mm-hmm. that's when we opened the restaurant.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's just such a staple of the city. At this point, I mean, are you guys even doing like really any kind of advertising per se? Because it's just, I mean, you know, it's just like, I mean, like you said, it became word of mouth and World's Fair. And, you know, it's just now, I mean, Pat O'Brien's Hurricane. That's just, you got Cafe Du Monde, you got, what, Central Grocery.
Yeah.
And you got here. Like, you know, like you got to go to these places for those specific things.
Well, it's funny because most people think that we don't have to do anything, that we're just sustaining, we're just doing it. And mm-hmm. people are coming here because they think that they have to come here or they want to come here. But really, there's a lot of work that goes behind making it appear effortless.
I like that. Yeah.
So, you know, you got to keep up with social media. You got to keep up with. We used to do a lot of print and not a lot, but I did enough to kind of navigate us through and kind of be represented everywhere. But a lot of our generosity and the love that we get from the city is through we do a lot of community donations, whether it's church or this fundraiser or that mm-hmm. fundraiser. So we stay in the public's mind and eyes through some of the generosity the generous things that we do throughout the year, which is so important. You have to be a community partner. You got to do your part.
Definitely. Down here, I mean, there's just so much pride and so much sense of community. I mean, I live in Jersey City, New Jersey, and I like it because, I mean, I grew up in New Jersey. I am a Jersey boy. I might not have a thick accent. I might not sound like Frankie Valli or anything like that, but it comes out every once in a while. I'd say tomato, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, or maybe with a few hurricanes in me, it'll come out more. But, yeah, down here, you know, there's the, lack of a better word, you know, the cliche of Southern hospitality, but it's not, I mean, it's a, you know, certain cliches are good because they're true and they're, you know, there just is that, but the specifically being down here and being a member of the community and giving back like that, I mean, what does it mean to you to be New Orleanian? Is that what you're right?
That's it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like a, you know, you say, I guess, New Jerseyan. I don't know what the exact, that's what we say, Jersey boy, Jersey girl. But yeah.
I don't know what else to
yeah,
say.
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny.
But yeah, what does that mean to, I mean, you grew up here, right? I mean, this is your home. What does it mean? I mean, this is a city that also a lot has happened to it, you know.
We've had a tremendous amount of things happen here, whether it's related or whatever. And we just kind of go along with it, and mm-hmm. we welcome everybody to come in our city. But I have to say, I'm sure I can speak for everybody else, we don't want too many changes to our city.
Okay.
And
yeah.
we welcome outsiders, and I say that kind of loosely, but you know, outsiders, you can come in, just embrace what we have here.
Yes.
And don't change what we have here.
Yeah.
Be respectful of our weird culture.
Which, I mean, you know, with people and just, you have to have a lot of self, what's the word, you know, responsibility in the sense of people aren't used to, let's say, an open container city. The fact that you can get, I mean, to-go cup. That's, you know, I bring friends down here for the first time. Like, okay, guys, let's go to the next place. And they start, you know, chugging their beer. I'm like, no, you can bring it with us. You just can't bring it into the next place. You got to be, again, respectful. You got to appreciate, you know.
We let people bring in their drinks from other places. It depends. If it's super crowded, we'll say, no, put that cup in the garbage, or you can't come in with that.
I mean, showing good faith that they're going to come in and purchase something here as well.
Or just not advertise somebody else.
But so yeah, certain times. But that's just something, you know, people have to, I feel like, you know, get used to. But, you know, it's I think people can be humbled pretty fast down here because, again, people, locals will tell you, like, no, like, not, you know, like, you're stepping, you know, out of bounds in some ways, you know, like when it comes to just drinking and enjoying themselves a little too much.
I see what you mean. Yeah. It's kind of I don't know. It's kind of like you can say something about your family member, but someone that's not in the family can't say anything about your family member.
Exactly.
We can say bad things about that person, but you can't. Just take all the good stuff.
I mean, God knows there's. I mean, being from New Jersey, I mean, it is a punchline of a state. Like when it comes to just so much, you know, TV shows and movies and like everything like that. I mean, anything New York. I mean, New Jersey is like the redheaded stepchild of like being right across the river. It's just like you watch so many shows that like whether it was, you know, big New York shows like Friends or How I Met Your Mother, and just like going to New Jersey is such a, you know, like why would I want to go? I don't want to move to New Jersey. And it's just like, especially Jersey City, it's an extension of New York City. It's like Brooklyn or Queens or Staten Island or the Bronx, it's like, you know, right across the river, quicker to get there than some certain places, but there's a certain stigmata to it.
That's the media. Am I right?
Yeah, that's and media and cheap laughs and just like, you know, the cliches that come along, stereotypes.
Stereotypes, yes. We have that same problem with weather and flooding here.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Baton Rouge in the summer. And Baton Rouge is only like an hour and 20 minutes from here. Yeah. Doing something at LSU, whatever. And it was raining hard here. Listening to everybody, even in Baton Rouge, they're saying, oh, New Orleans is underwater. New Orleans is flooding. National media is saying New Orleans is underwater. Mm-hmm. I called my manager here. I'm like, is anything going on? He goes, no, the sun's out. I'm like, this is, it's bad the way that they push the envelope with the truth with really what's going on here, because we flood, but it's sporadic.
Stuff snowballs fast, and then also when it comes to, unfortunately, the media, it's just like, as a business, they're like, what sells? And it's, you know, devastation back in, right. You know, I mean, but again, a lot of stuff has happened here. Just even when I was I was down here in October, right before that, there was the collapse of the Hard Rock. That was just, I mean, it's, you know, What is it to you to be in a city that, I mean, you guys are tough because a lot of, Katrina, BP, plenty of other hurricanes as well. I mean, what's going on here in the sense of community and just, like, sticking through it? Like, what does it mean to you, and what have your experiences been with that?
Well, I just think that, I mean, I guess we're resilient, either that or thick in the head. I don't know, but things do happen, and we just kind of, you get frustrated with the Hard Rock. Yeah. Frustrated, and it's devastating, and it's awful, and it really has debilitated the city in that area.
Yeah.
It's still blocked off, and I don't know. I mean, I scratch my head all the time going, you mean all the people in the world, nobody can come up with a good way to kind of demolish this one layer at a time or whatever. There's so many engineers, so I don't know why it's taking so long. But that's the kind of stuff that we just kind of have to go, okay, well, let's hope it happens soon. Let's hope they can figure it out.
So as far as being third generation, like what did that, did you feel like growing up and just being around it, did you feel any kind of pressure? Like this is what you got to do. Did you want to do something else? Like what was just that experience like, and just, you know, carrying on that legacy?
You know, it didn't dawn on me really till later in life, like in my late 20s, early 30s, because I just, my dad would call me and he'd need a bartender or he'd need somebody to fill in. I need you to go to the warehouse in full t-shirts or whatever. And then he had a little hotel. So I would just go wherever he needed help.
Mm-hmm.
And he was thrilled because when I was behind the bar, people tend to behave themselves a little bit more. Not that I'm such a, you know, a iron fist, but I'm the owner's daughter.
The cloud of the ownership looms.
Yeah. So he's like, this is awesome. Yeah, just keep on, just keep on working. And when we'll just kind of figure it out. So I graduated from Tulane. I worked in the bar throughout summers and everything, whether it was not waitressing, bartending or whatever needed to be downstairs. Mm-hmm. So I graduated from Tulane, and literally the next day, my dad said, okay, I need somebody in the office ASAP because somebody was retiring.
Yeah. What were you studying at Tulane?
Fine arts.
Fine. Yeah. All right.
General studies, yeah. Fine arts. So I really had no aspiration to run this place, for one. Just my grandfather was very old school, so he was very anxious to get me from downstairs in the bar to upstairs in the accounting department to learn that aspect of the business or just to fill in. So I did that, went to the office, and then kind of, you know, moved in different job duties and whatever.
Yeah.
My dad got, it just kind of morphed.
Yeah.
I do kind of the gift shop, and one year I came up with this really cute gift shop t-shirt design for the Crescent City Classic. It was like this little hurricane running.
Oh, awesome.
And my dad's like, that's awesome. I love that. Okay, you're in charge of the gift shop now. That's how it kind of worked.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
Jumping around from like department to department.
Department.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now what's your day-to-day like for you?
Well, now I feel like I am always checking up on everybody else to make sure that they do their job.
Yeah, so still department, but like the...
I still micromanage, unfortunately.
Yeah.
During the day because it's slow and I talk with the managers and we talk about everything from business to food to everything. And, you know, not everybody can... even though we have lots of managers, it just happens that way. We all micromanage at some point. Yeah. If there's a problem, we're going to deal with it right now.
Did your father or grandfather ever give you like a key piece of advice that you really still hold on to or anything like that? Or was
no, I think my dad gave everybody else advice.
Okay,
but not me.
Best advice of itself of just
he let me learn on my own, and when I made mistakes, and he would correct me. Mm-hmm. Whereas other people, I come across people that bartend when my dad was in the bar and everything, and they're like, oh my gosh, your dad taught me more about life and everything else than anybody I've ever known.
Wow.
I'm like, okay, well, good.
Yeah, what's that like? I mean, it's because it's a staple, and there's obviously so many people have worked here, like almost sharing your dad in a way and totally. Having like extended siblings. What's that feeling like?
That's totally it, sharing my dad with everybody.
Yeah.
And it's great, especially when he passed away. It was nice to hear how much of an impact he made on everybody's life. On the other hand, it was, you know, you're sharing your dad with everybody.
Yeah.
So I just kind of go with it. Just like, because I'm a New Orleanian, you just kind of go with it and say, okay, well, somebody let me know when I'm doing something wrong or not doing a good job. And we all let each other know.
Again, I mean, there is that level of candidness here, right?
Absolutely. Well, we've all known each other for a very long time.
Yeah, well, especially here, of course,
We have employees that have been here over 40 years. We have managers that they have longevity.
Yeah.
We have a lot of new managers. So it's a good mix of older, experienced people with new people that are coming in and they need to be taught.
Yeah, the old guard that just, brings it, brings them on in and teaches them. Yeah.
Absolutely. My son graduated from LSU 2 years ago, so he's working now. He's bartending now too, hopefully some longevity in this business, being fourth generation.
Fourth generation, keep the pass the torch.
Yeah, but I try to teach him things. He just doesn't listen to me.
Well, that's as a son, I can attest that that's kind of our MO, that we're a little thick-headed, you know, just in the general sense of being a son and not being like, Mom, you know. Like.
Exactly.
Do you have a really early memory of, you know, since you grew up around it, of just this place?
Well, it's funny because everybody's early memory is pretty much the same.
Okay.
At least the kids that used to come here. So my dad had this beautiful apartment across the street. So when anybody brought their children here, The deal is you get a big hurricane cup full of cherries, mm-hmm. and you send them across the street.
It's like the daycare center.
It's like the daycare center. So if you ask any of the, you know, we're all old now, but it was like, okay, here's your thing of cherries.
Yeah.
And knock yourself out.
Yeah.
And then running around.
Bunch of maraschino cherries.
Yeah, a bunch of maraschino cherries. Yeah. And then just being general in the environment, like the patio fountain was just, okay, that's a pretty patio fountain. Didn't really think anything of it until I was at Tulane and my sorority sisters found out that my dad owned Pateau's.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, what?
Yeah.
That's crazy. I said, okay, well, I guess it is. So let's have a party.
What sorority were you in?
Pi Phi.
I was in ZBT, Zeta Beta Tau.
Yep.
That's fun. What happened, like, when they found out? Was just like, oh, like, were they, was there a certain level of, like, expectation of, like, drinks, drinks on Shelly? Like,
not at all. In fact, my dad, when I joined the sorority, I was telling my dad this story or whatever, and he's like, well, let's have a Pi Phi party here. So he closed off the main bar and we just had an open bar. It was 18 to drink back then. So yeah, my dad, that was the kind of guy that he was. He just kind of embraced it.
He just sounds like the personification of a good time in a way.
Yeah.
Like, almost like the embodiment of New Orleans.
Yeah, he really was. An outdoorsman. He was a very, I guess, very much New Orleanian, between the hunting, the fishing, and the, going out and partying and food and everything. Yeah.
So what are you guys doing? You said you expanded into food. What are you guys doing here? Did you try to make, were you just going with classics? Were you trying to do your own, thing with food here? Or?
Well, when we first opened the restaurant, we bought Bourbon Street, 64 Bourbon Street in 1989. And then as just a private party venue.
Okay.
And it also worked out as an egress and everything. So it worked out great. We were dark a lot of times on Bourbon Street, like during the week and whatever. So we said, okay, well, the market's changing. We really need to kind of accommodate families and people of, under 21. So we kind of tweaked the menu.
Yeah.
And at first it was, well, we did different kinds of food. We had a big, huge pizza oven over there at one point.
Oh,
so we serviced the whole place with pizza.
Yeah.
We've done hot dogs just as something to eat while you're drinking.
Yeah. Because you need that. You want to keep drinking. You got to have that.
Yeah, you need
that base in you.
Exactly. So we've tried a bunch of different things.
Sure.
And the pizza oven was about the size of this room.
Okay,
back
wow.
then. It was huge.
Yeah.
So then we kind of went into a menu focused on fillets and steaks.
Okay.
As kind of our loss leader. So the fillets were like a good fillet, but charged $15 for it. Mm-hmm. So it was really just kind of a loss leader to come in, have a hurricane, have some other kind of appetizer, whatever.
Yeah.
Just to kind of keep people happy. And that turned into more of staples of what people are asking for here.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do some drinks. We'll do some food specials. Like on Friday, we'll do a shrimp po' boy or something like that.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah,
but these
the
days,
in. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, these days is a Cajun food. Etouffee, gumbo, things like that. Burgers are huge. The focaccia muffaletta is great.
Oh, yeah, that's, I mean, exactly. There's just such, the cuisine of New Orleans is just, I mean, it's world known. I mean, it's the food, I mean, such identity of the city for so many things, but the food alone is just, I mean, it might be my favorite cuisine. It's just, and that's the whole thing. It's not even just one thing. It's just so many different, it's a melting pot here.
Yes.
You know, just the rich history from French, Spanish, Afro-Caribbean, Native Americans, and then just obviously from there just becoming America itself, becoming a state, and just obviously other influences, I'm sure. And then you just even have like Vietnamese population now here, and just the food changing. What were you eating when you were growing up? Were you eating like this cuisine, or were you just kind of...
Oh, yeah. Grandmother would make etouffee.
Yeah.
My mom did a lot of fried shrimp and fried fish.
Ooh.
Did red beans and rice every Monday.
Yeah, that's the tradition. Yeah, that's right.
Because
I think I read like, what, because back in the day that was like laundry day, right? And you could like kind of like
right.
let that simmer on the stove, right? I think that's kind of where...
That was like a few generations
ago.
We
yeah,
still
yeah.
carry on that tradition.
That's the beauty. And that's what I love. And that's what, like, I mean, as someone, that just visits here, an outsider. But I love learning those things because there's just so many traditions. And then sometimes even when I'm bringing someone new here, they'll ask me something and be like, I don't know. And then I look it up and I learn something new. I mean, just there's all those like, it's like a city of like Snapple Cat facts, you know?
That's funny. Very true. Well, I was talking to my kids the other day about food, New Orleans food and whatnot. And when I was growing up, I used to put ketchup on my red beans and rice because that's how my dad ate it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So,
yeah.
You know, that we all have kind of like our little weird thing.
Yeah.
I don't put ketchup on it now, but back then it was like, okay, well, that's how we're supposed to eat it. All right.
Yeah.
It's all good. Ketchup.
As far as the food scene in the city now, do you have any favorite spots or like where are we, you know, going out to eat a lot or are we cooking at home?
Both.
Both.
The city has exploded with restaurants.
Yeah.
I think we're up to over 1,700 restaurants now.
Wow.
Which
yeah.
makes it really difficult to hold really good staff because there's so many restaurants. So they just pop from one restaurant to the other. Mm-hmm. It's something that we're not really used to. We're used to our staff staying for a really long time. Mm-hmm. But you have that group that just wants to travel from restaurant to restaurant. There's so many restaurants, and yes, there are some new ones on the horizon that I've been to recently, and they're all good. I haven't come across one.
It's hard to find a bad meal in this city.
It really is. And we usually, like, you know, there's a great Chinese restaurant on Decatur Street now. Mm-hmm. That you gotta try, it's so good. And just in the warehouse district, the whole area is exploding with restaurants. Mid-city has just, they're just loaded with restaurants.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously expanding food scene. What changes have you seen? Good and bad, possibly. Again, there's been a lot of hard times for the city as far as, again, Katrina and BP and just, you know, like stuff like that. But what changes have you seen?
Regarding food?
Regarding food and in the city itself, yeah.
The influx of people that have moved here
has
made a big difference. And the, of course, the housing situation, just mm-hmm. like any other city, people move in the city, out of the city, and they're trying to find their place again where generations used to be in one section.
Yeah.
And now they're kind of getting a little dispersed.
Gotcha.
But the food scene has definitely exploded in the past 10 years. We used to be very sighted in what we like, for the exception of those foodies that have always experimented on everything. Mm-hmm. But now the general Joe is experimenting with fusion Cajun and, you know, Vietnamese Cajun and different things. So it's I don't know, it's great because we have a huge variety now.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of feel like we're just kind of like melted into what the rest of the country's doing.
Yeah, I mean, well, no, there is a food renaissance kind of going on right now. It even happened, I don't know what happened first, but definitely even just in the beer scene. Beer used to be just, I mean, you had your staples. You had your Bud. You had your Miller. You had your Coors.
Yeah.
Your fancy beers were what? Stella, Heineken,
right.
Guinness. That was exotic. The past two times I've been here, I started actually going to breweries around here because they're really just, you know, not even just popping up, but things that, you know, I mean, first, I mean, as a testament to your establishment, like, I think cocktails down here, you know? Like, I think Hurricane. I don't think beer right away, but there are just so many breweries down here, and that's what's happening. I mean, the brewery that I did open in Vermont, it's sour beer only. Like, that's just how specific
mm-hmm.
people, like, there's that many people that enjoy sour beers that you can have a brewery that just does sours.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And every part of the city has its beer gardens, and there are multiple. You drive down Chapultepec, and there are beer gardens all over the place, which is really fun.
Yeah.
It's a nice change, but eventually, like anything else, I think it's cyclical. It's gonna go, you know.
Sure.
It's popular now, and then that beer garden might become some other kind of garden down the line. Whatever the new trend is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, remember when tequila was really popular years ago?
Yeah, exactly.
They had tequila bars. Now tequila's not so much.
Yeah.
Bourbon's the big thing.
Yeah, exactly. I love my bourbon.
I do too.
Yeah, what's your go-to bourbon?
A Maker's Mark Old Fashioned.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Oh, I love an old fashioned.
Me too.
I usually drink Bullet Bourbon on the rocks.
That's I have a bottle of bourbon, a Bullet at home too.
Yeah.
It depends what kind of mood I'm in.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, so what do you think it is about the hurricane. I mean, do you even, like, what's, as far as even the history of the hurricane and that becoming the drink here, and just, I mean, a drink, it's pretty much like hurricanes, and I feel like Sazeracs are like the, you know, drink of this town, you know? The hurricane is just everlasting.
It is everlasting, isn't it?
Right.
It has to do with the presentation, the taste, mm-hmm. and the fun that you have while you're drinking a hurricane. Because it's a social drink. It's big and it'll, you know, last a long time.
Yeah, people
you
come
can share
here.
It with somebody.
Yeah, exactly. You can share. You get a big old, I mean, well, you guys got that big glass here, right?
Like, we have the big Magnum glass. Yeah. And then the hurricane sold in a 26-ounce glass.
Yeah, and people get to take home the glasses with them if they want, you know.
They did. You know, we changed that about 2 months ago.
Oh,
so
wow, okay.
Now you can buy the glass.
Yeah.
It's just in the gift shop now.
Oh, okay.
So you don't prepay for the glass.
Gotcha.
The reason that the prepaid thing happened decades and decades ago is because people were stealing the glasses.
Yeah. So it was good to take that, like, insurance, like, you know. Like, yeah.
You're going to pay for it ahead of time. Yeah. And if you don't want it, we'll give you your money back.
That's smart. Yeah.
But.
So, yeah, just.
I don't know. I just decided to change it. Well, not decided, just irrationally, but we've been thinking about this for a really long time. Mm-hmm. People, I'm on the patio and I'm listening to people and they're going, they want us to bus our own tables. We have to bring our glasses back up to the bartender because they had to bring them to the bartender to get their money back. The waiter can't do it.
Gotcha.
So it's just.
Yeah, it's accommodating to your clientele. Like,
yeah.
As you saw, there's more pros than cons to it.
Yes.
You're the boss.
We'll
you're the
see.
Boss. You're the boss, lady.
Maybe we'll change it again. I don't know. You know, but
hopefully there's more honest people these days, and you know. Well, I mean, so yeah, when it comes to a hurricane, you know, obviously every place serves their own iteration. What is it about yours specifically that you think is just like, you know, what's great about it?
Because it's consistent, for one.
Okay.
It's very consistent, and
what do you do to make sure that that is consistent?
It's all made in batches.
Gotcha.
So it's because we have such high volume, we can make it in big batches.
Mm-hmm.
Where some of the other places, they'll mix it as a cocktail.
Yeah.
And use whatever they have on hand or whatever they want to put in it. Some people put lemon juice. Some people put, you know, whatever. Anything's a hurricane now. It could be pineapple juice and.
Sure.
Water, and they would put rum and they'll call it a hurricane. So it's all kind of relative. We're very consistent.
Okay.
And
what are the is it a secret recipe or are we?
Well, it is, but
okay.
it's passion fruit mix.
Okay.
Our hurricane passion fruit mix and rum.
Okay. Yeah.
That's it. It's simple. It's simple.
It's delicious. It's simple and delicious, let me tell you. That's
well, good. Nice. I'm glad you like it.
Yeah. For me, again, being a visitor, it's always the torment of. Where do I go this time? Do I go back to the place that I love or do I try something new? And I feel obviously that's harder for food than drink per se, because especially in New Orleans, because then you get to go. I can come in here, get a hurricane here and keep on keeping on down Bourbon Street.
Right.
And then maybe get a drink that I love from someplace else. But it's just, you know, something that when you're visiting a city anywhere. And, you know, in general, that you visit and you're like, do I stick? I know I had a good meal there. I know I had a good drink there.
Well, that's the problem. See, the food is, you're committed.
Yeah.
You're committed to the food. If you don't really care for your drink, you can just get another drink easily somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Or at the same place or whatever. Food, you're sitting down, you're committed to that meal, so you really gotta think about it a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
You
yeah.
go someplace where you like.
Yeah, and it's not a city of, like when it comes to cuisines that I love Spanish food, and I love in Spain, like they're the, you know, tapas,
mm-hmm.
and just like small bites. And that's not portions down here, they are big portions, you know, food, you know.
We're getting some small plates places.
Okay,
yes. We have a Spanish place on Esplanade, actually.
Oh, awesome.
That's really good.
That's a perfect street for it, Esplanade.
Yep. It's on the museum side, but yeah, it's good.
Yeah, that would be like, I feel like the next venture. I mean, obviously, but places do want people to come and sit down and stay there. But like that would be like a cool like experience, almost like a, you know, New Orleans tapas tour or something like that, because that's, I mean, I loved This trip was different. This is the first time I've been down here by myself. I came down here to record these episodes. You know, I've been down here with my girlfriend 3 times, but we came second time. We brought a couple, like friends of hers, and it was their first time. And I just, nothing gives me more pride than like being, I call myself a food Sherpa, and you know, bringing people around and show them where to eat and everything like that.
But you have to have eaten at that place first before you bring somebody new.
Yeah.
Just so you know that it's good.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But I have excellent taste, so I know they're going to love it.
Of course.
But but it was great. It was like eating with another couple. Like, I don't know, like what would be, you know, number one, you know, sometimes traveling with another couple, it's like, we've got our own pace. We got to, you know, we want, I like jumping from place to place. But it was good as far as then sitting down eating at somewhere, because then we would order like the quantity of food for two people and just each take a little bit, so then we can move to the next
place. That's how I love to eat.
Yeah, right?
That's how I like to eat around here.
Yeah.
I'll go sit at the bar somewhere, have a cup of turtle soup.
Mm-hmm.
Next day, go have some grilled shrimp at this place over here.
Yeah.
And just kind of like, you know, simple, small plates, and then you get, then you can tell people, okay, well, I like this over at this place, and I like that over there.
They specialize this. They, that's the best, right? I mean, it's, and that's what it's all about. I mean, life is just unfortunately too short, and there's just too many. I mean, alone in the city, you said, I mean, however many restaurants, you know, there are now, and obviously bars too, and musicians to see, you know, like I've got conflicting. It's like, I don't get to see every musician I want to see every time, because they might be playing at the same time at places across, you know, Tipitina's to Blue Nile or something like that,
right,
across town. But that's just, you gotta, I guess, pick your, you know, pick your own.
Gotta come down more often.
That is true. I mean, it feels, I recognize myself as a visitor, as an outsider still, but it feels more and more, every visit feels like a home, you know, home away from home.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That means that you just kind of melt into the culture.
Yeah. And I love this, and this trip was special because since I was by myself, I mean, I'm a chatty Cathy anyway. That's why I have a podcast. But, but just being by myself, just even more so, obviously, when you're traveling with people, you're conversing with them, and you'll meet new people, whatever. But this, since I was by myself, really talking with locals, going to Kermit's mother-in-law lounge, and you know, just the, as I was talking with Big Sam of the Big Sam and Funky Nation, like I said, the approachability of everyone here, but especially musicians, like, you know, it's special to the city because you just really get to, you know, you get to watch these amazing, these world-class musicians.
Mm-hmm.
New Orleans jazz. I mean, it's just, I mean, it's jazz starting here is just from there, just a ripple effect of rock and roll and just everything. You can, I mean, you can thank, you know, the city for so much. And so you get to see these world-class musicians, and then they sit at the bar. I mean, it was his bar that he owns, Kermit, but like you see him, and then after they play a set, you can go up to him, you can take a picture if you want, but they'll just have a conversation with you. They're just so approachable. I mean, what do you find as far as that in the city, and just even obviously you as an owner, and just talking with, you know, whether it's other locals or visitors, like how do you enjoy that aspect
of
it?
Do I think anything of it?
Yeah.
No, I just talk to them.
You just talk. Yeah.
And then when people find out that I'm third generation owner of this place, and they're like, oh, wow, that's super cool.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, you just talk to them. I mean, that's just what else? How else are you going to be?
Yeah, exactly.
Not talk to anybody? That's
well,
so fun.
Well, you know what? I mean, New Yorkers, sorry for the foodies out there that I bring up similar topics on episodes, but New York, it's kind of, there are nice people. You know, there's the hustle and bustle. So if you're on the street, like some people don't, like they just want to get to where they're going. But if you're at a bar and you're at a restaurant, like you make small talk with bartenders, and that's the same.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've been to New York, I guess, five or six times. Always find friendly people.
Yeah.
But you have to be in some place comfortable having a drink or food or something. But passing them on the street, not so much. Like you said, they just want to get where they're going.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. You're third generation owner of this place. Is there anything that you're like, I want to leave like this behind? Like, is there something that you're going to put, like maybe you have already, as far as like your own staple, like of the place, or just, you know, just if you do pass the torch to your son or anything like that?
Oh, that torch won't be passed for quite a while.
Okay.
But throughout the years, well, with my dad started kind of retiring when he was around 50.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I was around 25, 24-ish.
Okay.
And so I was here. He started retiring slowly, so I just picked up more and more things, whether it was the marketing, whether it was doing off-sites with the catering, whether it was working in the sales office or whatever. Mm-hmm. I just kind of like did many different things. And as the we had many changes that he wasn't even aware of, like menu changes, price changes, decor changes, things like that. But he was fine with it because he knew that we were here, working for him, and we're going to do our very best for him. So yeah, there've been a lot of changes. We have a manager too. They're like, Shelly, I can't believe all the changes that have happened over like the past 20 years. It's crazy. But you wouldn't know because it's not drastic changes.
Yeah,
it's
slowly
just
but surely,
improvements to the business.
Gotcha.
We do have a couple of franchises, so that was the one thing that was my dad's vision, was to have a lot of franchises.
Okay.
And of course he was starting to retire then, so,
so it's just like, I like this, you do the work.
So I want to go here and you guys do it.
Yeah.
But we have two left, one in Universal Studios and one in San Antonio.
Okay, cool, awesome.
Yeah, so they're a little replicas. They do well.
I mean, since it is Carnival, is Mardi Gras time, do you have any personal traditions that come along with that, like along even specifically on Fat Tuesday or anything that you like to do?
Not really. No. It's kind of changed as the kids have gotten older. Mm-hmm. So when they were little, I'd come here to work and meet my husband uptown on St. Charles with the kids, or meet up with some friends or whatever when they were little. And as they've gotten older, it's kind of changed now. I'm here.
Okay. Batten down the hatches.
Well, because it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun. Even if it's raining and it's cold, it's still fun. Mm-hmm. So last year, I opened up the Briar Suite, our private party room, to just like some friends and a couple of family members and whatever.
Oh, nice.
And we hung out there and just kind of walked around. I came on the floor, talked to managers, see if everything's going. I mean, they don't need me at this point. Mm-hmm. They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
But I like to just be here anyway.
Yeah, I like that. That's good. That's fun. It sounds simple and pleasant for what can be kind of a chaotic day, I guess, and, you know, for some, you know, just
a lot
going on, a lot of parades, you know, all different neighborhoods. I mean, you're in the heart of the quarter, you know.
Well, my husband and kids, one boy's riding in tote. He rides in tote, so
okay.
That's the Sunday before Mardi Gras. So that's really the only tradition that we have to go watch them ride in tote,
mm-hmm.
And we meet up with friends uptown and come down here afterwards or whatever. But that's like the one thing. Okay, we got to do this. We got to go to tote. And I used to meet them for Endymion, but I'm here all day. So after I'm like, I don't feel like driving over there. So it's more fun here anyway.
Gotcha. Well, let's talk a couple of, you know, it's called Foodie Film. So let's talk a couple of food scenes. I brought up a couple of movies to you. You said you're not a big, movie buff. You said your husband's always just like.
I like movies. I just never remember anything about movies.
Gotcha.
I don't remember lines or specific scenes.
Well, I'll try to make this as easy for you as possible. Let's talk. This is a movie that, I mean, it's such a classic. Steel Magnolias. I know it's like one of my mom's favorites. It's just what an ensemble. Sally Field, Julia Roberts, Olivia Dukakis. I mean, just a tremendous Dolly Parton.
Yeah, right.
Tremendous movie. And it's right in the beginning. It's Julia Roberts is getting married. So let's play the scene right now, then we'll talk about it.
Weezer, there's someone I'd like you to meet.
That looks like an autopsy.
Now, this is Jackson's aunt, Fern Thornton, from Alexandria. She made the cake.
You did this.
I'm guilty. It's very simple, really. It just takes patience.
You only do armadillos?
No, I can do anything except snakes. I don't have counter space.
Beginning of the movie, I think, that's like one of like the opening scenes. They're getting ready for that wedding. It's Julia Roberts' wedding, and Sally Field is her mom, and Tom Skerritt is her dad. And I love it. Shirley MacLaine's also in this movie, the great Shirley MacLaine, and Wheezy. But they make that. There's the aunt that makes the. There's the wedding cake, and then there's like the groom's cake, and the groom's cake is an aardvark cake.
Oh right, I do remember that.
Yeah, there we go.
The aardvark cake. Okay, I remember
with
that
like
now.
The blood red
cake,
and then it's a gray on the outside.
Yeah.
And then just like that deep blood red, red velvet kind of cake on the inside. And that's just, I love just like the reactions that they have in that movie. That's just, do you remember like, seen that movie for the first time or anything like that, or just
I remember crying.
Yeah. Oh, it's a heart. Yeah, pulling on the strings of the heart in that movie.
Yeah.
But that's just, I love that. I don't know if that's like a, I've never experienced that at a wedding I've been to. Have you ever been to a wedding that they have like two different cakes?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah, that's definitely that's not a Southern thing.
Is that maybe it's a Southern?
Must be a Southern thing. Oh, you have to have a bride's cake and you have to have a groom's cake.
Oh, okay.
Usually the groom's cake is something relative to what he likes, whether it's in sports or golf
or whatever. I like this.
It's usually sports driven, and then the bride's cake, and it's usually chocolate.
Okay.
And then the bride's cake is pretty with flowers, yeah, or you
vanilla,
know,
yeah, just all the typical.
Always a groom's cake, no matter how small the wedding is.
Well, I like making things about me, so I'll have to adapt that tradition and have a groom's cake at my potential wedding someday.
There you go.
See, we're remembering things about this scene.
Uh-huh.
It's such a classic. I don't know, what year did that movie come out?
That had to be like early 80s?
89. End of the
89?
Yeah.
Oh, thought it was earlier than that.
But that's just, I mean, like I said, Shirley MacLaine, Olympia Dukakis, Sally Field, Julia Roberts, Dolly Parton, Daryl Hannah, Tom Skerritt, Sam Shepard, Dylan McDermott. I mean, this is just one, like, it's truly an ensemble, you know, movie that just, again, pulls it funny, sad. It's just...
Yeah, what a cast.
Kind of a perfect movie. I haven't watched it in a while, but definitely
haven't. I haven't either. I might have to find that and sit down and watch it with my daughter.
Yeah, and then you can know all this stuff and you can quiz your husband on it.
I don't know if he'll know anything from Steel Magnolias.
What was his groom cake?
Saints.
Saint, yeah.
His groom cake was Saints. Or was it Jesuit? Might have been, I think it was Saints.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, I remember we had some kind of issue. His groom cake got messed up because it was in a hot kitchen, and then it all worked out great. It all worked out great. We're still married after 26 years.
Did it say, was it the fleur-de-lis and just like it say who dat on it? Or?
I'm trying to think of what it was. Boy,
maybe a helmet.
I guess I don't have a very good memory.
No, it's okay. I mean, you're the boss lady of Pat O'Brien's. You got a lot on your mind.
I think it just had a Saints emblem on it.
Yeah.
It might have been Saints and the then basketball team, which was the Hornets.
Oh, Hornets before his Pelicans.
Hornets was after we got married. I don't know.
Yeah,
it was sports.
Yeah, I'm not, you know what? I mean, I love football. I love baseball. Hockey would be my third, but yeah, but still, I'm not like, I know my teams, but I don't know much else about other. I'm pretty bad when it comes to that stuff. One other scene I think would be fun to talk about is since this is a drink establishment, there's this movie, I don't know if you've ever seen, it's called Thank You for Smoking, but it's a good movie, but let's just play, it's just a classic scene with one of the greatest actors of all time, Robert Duvall, and the lead of the movie, Aaron Eckhart, and this is just him briefly explaining what goes into a mint julep.
Yeah. You know the secret to a really good julep?
No, sir.
Well, you crush the mint down onto the ice with your thumb, and you grind it in. See, and it releases the menthol. Now, you know who taught me that?
No, sir, who?
Fidel Castro.
So that's just a quick, fun scene that I always think. I mean, Duvall doing his very Southern genteel accent. Does it sound like he's doing explaining something right when it comes?
You have to release the oils in the mint.
Mm-hmm.
But we put the mint in, and ice in, about a half shot of simple syrup, two shots of bourbon, and muddle it. So we don't do it with a finger; we do it with a muddling spoon.
Yeah, yeah, that's just.
And then garnish with an orange.
That's just a fun little set. You know where I learned that? Fidel Castro.
Fidel Castro. Drinking with Fidel Castro.
Right? Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, that's... I thought that was kind of an appropriate, you know, this being obviously a drinking establishment. That's kind of...
Oh, yeah. And we sell a lot of mint juleps.
Yeah? Well, yeah. What would you say next to the hurricane? What's, like, the next in, like, demand?
The next one would be Bloody Marys.
Bloody Mary, yeah, mm-hmm. For a little brunch time or just all day?
All day long.
All
our Bloody
long.
Mary mix is really good.
Oh, I've never had. I might have to have a Bloody Mary here.
Absolutely.
That's, not might. I will, definitely will have a Bloody Mary.
Yep, we sell a lot of Bloody Marys, and we sell, probably the next would be mint julep.
Okay.
We sell a lot.
I love a good mint julep.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too. But the bartenders really need to preface this when somebody orders one, because a lot of people think that it's like a super sweet kind of, you know, sipping kind of southern kind of ladylike drink, and then they taste it and they're like, whoa, well, this is really strong.
Yeah. It's like one of those, like, even Long Island iced tea just always has that connotation to it. It's just like, oh, women order Long Island iced tea, so people just think it's going to be this like dainty thing, but it's just like Long Island iced tea. You're pouring everything and anything.
Yeah. Else, you got two ounces of alcohol in there.
Yeah.
Depending on how they make it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Strong stuff.
Well, last but not least, the segment's called Gut Instinct, so these are just some questions that whatever comes to your mind first.
Okay.
All right. Favorite fast food?
Ooh, fast food. Honestly, I don't really eat fast food often. Okay, there's a barbecue place in Pensacola that I like to get.
Yeah.
They go through drive-thru. All
right.
I have to say, favorite fast food, McDonald's French fries.
Oh, that's famous story in my household that my mom likes to remind my dad of, is that when she was pregnant, I believe with my sister, not me, either way, she was pregnant with one of us, and she wanted McDonald's French fries. And my dad, he went and he got, on his way back, Burger King fries.
Oh, no.
No, it's totally different. And we're just talking, even in general, if she just requested that on any which day, you know, like, I would think that she would still be like, but these are Burger King fries. But, you know, just during being pregnancy and having, you know, like, you know, just certain, you know, craving.
Yes, and that's what
fries.
You want.
That's what, yeah. And because those McDonald's, when they're fresh out of the basket.
Ooh, and then you dip it in the Frosty.
Yeah.
that's good stuff.
The sweet and savory, yeah. Well, let's see. I mean, you guys are famous for a drink, but let's see what yours is. What's your go-to alcoholic beverage of choice?
Typically white wine.
White
Chardonnay.
Wine? Yeah, Chardonnay.
Mm-hmm.
Cook and drink with it. You know?
That's the way that's how you unwind.
Yeah, pour a little bit over the chicken or the shrimp and then take a swig from the bottle.
That's how I do it. Kyle, you got it.
Favorite childhood snack?
Childhood snack?
Yeah.
Oh, you know what I used to love? Bunny bread rolled up into a bit like a little roll and then dip it in syrup.
Oh yeah. I know, yeah, that's a classic one that I've heard. And then I hear sometimes even people then say the syrup and then sprinkles on it.
I never did the sprinkles.
Never did
the
That's like too much. That's overload, right?
My mom must have never bought sprinkles. But, yeah,
like, you know, those little round ones that are like almost like on the king. Well, a king cake is like the sugar, but
oh, yeah. Wow. That's a fancy way of serving it. The bunny bread with the I like it.
Sweet or savory?
Savory.
Savory. Favorite food city? Sans New Orleans. We're in a fantastic food city. So another city you've been to that you love
the
food.
The Bahamas.
Bahamas, yeah.
Yep. We went there last summer actually, and we've eaten at a lot of really yummy places around the country. But every restaurant we went to in Bahamas was awesome. We stayed in the hotel complex, and there were a bunch of hotel restaurants, but it was just fantastic.
Favorite cuisine?
I guess Italian.
Yeah.
New Orleans Italian.
New Orleans Italian. What's the what makes just, New Orleans Italian?
Just a little different.
Yeah.
More bell peppers, less sweet.
Down here you guys have what you call the Holy Trinity, right? It's like the peppers, onion, and celery. Like
right.
That goes in
everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
I love it. Holy Trinity. I love that. It's just like food can be, I mean, you know, just such a, in a way, religious experience, you know, the spiritual in a way. And so
it is.
Yeah, right? So I love that it's called the Holy Trinity. I feel like I haven't seen it. I love like collecting little pieces of like food artwork and stuff like that. That would be kind of like a fun. I want like some kind of design. Maybe you could make one for it. Of just like, you know, the Holy Trinity of just like.
I've seen that around here before.
You've seen that around here?
I think the little gift shop on the corner. Okay. They have a lot of New Orleans stuff, and I'm pretty sure I saw something about Holy Trinity.
Okay, I'll have to check that out.
But it's true. Yeah, we have some old style Italian restaurants. Mm-hmm. I can't say that I'm like full fledged Italian, but.
Yeah, as far as...
If I'm going to eat carbs, it's going to be something Italian.
Yeah, nice. Favorite condiment?
Crystal hot sauce.
That's... I always make sure to buy some down here. I love it. What's the last thing you ate?
Not enough, because my stomach's growling.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is almost over, I promise.
Oh, well, this is so boring.
That's fun, you know.
I had a turkey sandwich from the deli down the street.
Okay.
But it was good. It had some applewood bacon on top of it with dressed with lettuce, tomato.
Yeah. That's not just a turkey sandwich. That's like a turkey club. That's good. I mean, coming down here again, just visiting, I'm obviously eating mostly, the food, like New Orleans food and Cajun Creole and getting these staples that I don't get to have up north. But it's just like, I like learning. I mean, that's, just like anywhere else, like you're not going to be eating that stuff every day. You had yourself a turkey sandwich.
I had a turkey sandwich because, as you know, the national championship was this weekend, and we've been out and about all weekend eating all over the place. So I was like, I need something like totally just simple.
Yeah.
Totally simple.
Yeah. I appreciate that. What would be your last meal?
Crawfish.
And it's crawfish, crawfish season, yeah. You have a favorite crawfish spot?
My house.
My husband makes
the best crawfish.
Wow. Yeah. What's his like recipe entail?
He gets seasoning already made from this this place on Magazine Street, mm-hmm. and he's been getting the same seasoning for like 20, 30 years.
Oh, wow.
And it just has the best mix of everything. And then he buys lemon oil uh-huh. and puts the lemon oil in with it. And it's perfect. It's just great.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Like potatoes and corn on the cob?
Put everything. Yeah. I love the Brussels sprouts in the...
Oh, I've never had...
Sprouts, mushrooms... Artichokes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Learn that you got to cook the artichoke a little bit before you put it in the boil.
Before you put it into the boil.
Otherwise, it won't cook as much.
Gotcha.
I mean, people around here, they'll put anything in crawfish boil.
How long is the boil?
He typically boils it for, I think, 20 minutes. I'm usually having a beer somewhere while he's cooking.
Yeah.
But
beer or that bottle of Chardonnay somewhere.
Exactly. Have two beers and then I hit the wine.
Okay. All right.
So he boils it and then lets it sit and puts ice in it.
Oh, yeah. I gotcha.
And then we're ready to eat.
Awesome. Yeah, I might be coming back down in a couple of weeks, and I unfortunately didn't have enough time this one to go get some crawfish. Maybe I'll sneak it in today before I have to hit up the airport.
Well, you might be able to sneak in a few, but this isn't crawfish season just yet.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
They have some in stores, but...
Yeah, more February is when it really starts, right?
February, March.
Yeah. And then you even have Crawfish Fest. You have a whole festival designated to it. So it's a special food. I love the seasonal food down here.
Mm-hmm.
Do you prefer to dine in or dine out?
Dine out.
What would be your spirit food? What food best embodies you, your personality, and your mind?
Oh, okay. Do you have one?
Honestly, I mean, it's almost like a genre of its own. Like, there's just so many things underneath it, but I would say, like, a sandwich. And if I had to go specific, maybe, like, roast beef, cheddar, but then Russian dressing, some pickles. Like, a little bit of, like, classic, but then, like, a little bit of something different to it. Because I think I'm an average Joe kind of guy, and I think I get along with everybody. So as far as then when it comes to sandwiches, it's like sandwiches are for the people. I'm for the people.
You're for the people.
For the people. That's a. All right. I'm starting my presidential candidacy right now. Kyle, no, I'm not old enough yet. I think you have to be 35 or 36 or something like that to be run for president. So next one.
Okay. I don't know. For some silly reason, what comes to mind are grilled scallops on top of spinach.
There you go.
I don't know why.
The segment's called Gut Instinct, so you're going with it.
I'm going with it.
I like it. Yeah, you got the greenery in there, but then you've got I like the classiness of the scallop, and you can't. Yeah.
That might be because I was watching a food show last night and they did a grilled scallop, and I'm kind of thinking, okay, I'm going to have to do some scallops sometime soon.
I love scallops.
I do too.
That's just
a little hollandaise on top of it, maybe. Mm-hmm. Or if you want to go simple, do this lemon butter.
Yeah.
They're good.
Awesome. You're going to the movies. You having any kind of snack there?
In my younger days, I'd always get popcorn, mm-hmm. but can't do all that salt now.
But yeah, popcorn bag, I mean, movie classic. Last but not least, it's kind of a heavy question, but what's a great lesson, if not the greatest lesson, you've learned in food? I mean, you run an establishment, but you've been around since obviously your whole life here, but even it doesn't have to be Pat O'Brien's related, but yeah, great lesson you've learned.
The thing about food is that it brings everybody together.
Mm-hmm.
You can be sitting at a huge table with, 20 people. You can be sitting across from your husband or just one person. It brings you together and you talk about it. And we all love to talk about food. So it's just whether it's sitting at a crawfish boil and just getting your hands dirty, drinking beer, wine, or whatever, or having a really elegant meal, it just brings everybody together. Everybody understands it.
Yeah.
I mean, what better thing to put you in a good mood than food? Some good food.
It doesn't, yeah, exactly. Good food, good company, doesn't get any better than that.
Absolutely.
Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to come on to Foodie Films. Please right now tell everyone where they can like find you guys on social media, all that good stuff.
Okay, well, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Social media, we have Twitter, we have Instagram, mm-hmm. we have Snapchat. It's patobryans.com is our website. And pretty much all of our contact information is there. Operations VP, my mm-hmm. president, marketing person, and all that kind of stuff. We've skinnied down the website quite a bit. It used to be a lot of pages and just thought, that's too much. So it's simple. It's easy to navigate.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, again, Shelley, thank you so much. We have a little catchphrase to end every episode. Something my grandmother always said, it's there's more to cut. I feel like it's just a line that, you know, she's talking about, like, she was specifically talking about the platter of food, you know, when it was getting sparse. It's just like, oh, don't worry, there's more to cut.
I love that.
So it's something that I like every guest to kind of repeat to the foodies out there. So if you don't mind saying it right now.
For Absolutely. Me. There's more to cut.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yummy, yummy, yummy. I got love in my tummy and I feel like I'm loving you. Love you such a sweet.